Chapter 22, Spring, 1467. The entire population of La Boule, an normally peaceful Normandy village on the wooded banks of the Seine, turned out to see the King of France. Although the King had wished to be there to meet him, Richard took advantage of a favourable combination of wind and tide, sailing up the river from the port of Honfleur, where he had been welcomed as royalty and presented with the keys to the city. The main road through the village was decorated with colourful flags and banners, which fluttered in the light spring breeze, creating a celebratory atmosphere. Richard's fleet of ships carried 200 men from Sandwich, including trumpeters, a dozen mounted knights, and their squires. Together with his personal guard, dressed in a new red livery with banners of the Bear and Ragged Staff, they lined both sides of the road. The sound of trumpets and cheering people echoed through the village, heralding the arrival of the King's party as it made its way to where Richard waited. King Louis seemed keen to impress, as for once he wore his royal robes and was escorted by chevaliers. The elite knights of the King's guard were mounted on white chargers, and each carried the flowing blue banner of their king with golden fleur-de-lis. Richard approached them as the King dismounted from his horse. "Welcome, my lord. You do me a great honour." The King bent double, coughing at the effort of his ride, then greeted Richard in French. "Earl of Warwick, it is good to see you after such a long time." He hugged Richard warmly. Richard was concerned to see that despite his effusive manner, the King looked unwell and his cough sounded like the symptom of a deeper problem. He also looked much older than at their secret meeting 3 years before at the Grand Castle of Amboise. "It is good to be meeting officially at last, Your Grace." The King acknowledged his reference to their secret meeting and lowered his voice. "I regret there will not be any hunting this time, although there is much for us to discuss." "This time I also have authority from King Edward to finalise a truce between our countries." The King seemed pleased. "Good. I will escort you to Rouen, Earl Warwick." Richard pointed to his ships, moored at the quayside. "Will you sail with us to the city, Your Grace?" King Louis seemed to consider it for a moment, then made a decision. "I am not much of a sailor. I will ride ahead and arrange a grand reception for you." Richard watched the King's party leave. He studied the river and turned to his captain. "Am I right in thinking the tide is no longer in our favour?"
"You are, my lord. We'll have to wait. The Seine is noted for strong currents and shallow water."
Richard stared at the fast-flowing river, watching as an uprooted tree flowed past. Its branches stuck out of the water like skeletal hands, and he tried not to think of it as a bad omen.
"I've heard the spring tides bring a flood."
"Yes, my lord. They call it a masquerade. It has claimed many ships on their way upriver to Rouen." "In that case, the main fleet will return to the deep water of Honfleur. We need only 3 ships to carry the rest of the men to the city." While he waited for the tide, Richard pondered on his mission and what he could hope to achieve. The treaty was not a foregone conclusion, as the prospect of a Burgundian marriage with Edward's sister would displease King Louis. There was also the question of how Edward would react on his return. Their last meeting had been amicable, although he wondered how he would ever regain Edward's trust, whatever the outcome of his negotiations in Normandy. By mid-afternoon, their ships were ready to sail. Although the tide had turned, the water was still low. Richard was keen to arrive in Rouen in daylight and gave the order to sail. There was a real danger of running aground on the raised banks, so they made slow progress. The sailors swinging lines weighted with lead and shouting out the depth. Richard felt the keel of his ship grinding on the gravel of the riverbed at one point, and was relieved when the rising water floated them clear. At last, the tall spires of the city of Rouen came into view. Richard had never visited the historic city where King Edward was born and Anne's father had died. He frowned as he remembered how his old rival, Henry Beaufort, lost the city to the French 18 years before. They were welcomed by a band of musicians as they moored at the quayside. The crowd of curious onlookers cheered as Richard shook hands with the King, who greeted them on the quayside with his entourage. Once the men and the horses were safely ashore, the King led them in a grand procession through the town to the old cathedral of Notre Dame, where they gave thanks and prayed for peace in front of a packed congregation. Richard was shown to his room at the lodge of the Dominican friars and was invited to a royal reception at the king's palace, the Chateau Bouvriel. A grand banquet was prepared. With Richard as guest of honour, he was surprised to be introduced to the queen, who had travelled to Rouen for the banquet. Surrounded by a chattering group of ladies-in-waiting, Queen Charlotte was now slim and attractively dressed in a flowing silk dress decorated with silver and gold. As they were introduced, she gave no sign they had met before, although Richard saw a flash of recognition in her eyes. Many important nobles from all over France arrived and were all keen to be introduced, curious to see the man they had heard so much about. Richard sensed that some were still reserved about a peace treaty with England, although they were all duly respectful to him and his officers. Afterwards, the king invited Richard to join him in his private rooms, and like the finely decorated reception rooms at the chateau, the king's apartments had low ceilings and rustic furniture. King Louis had changed into his more comfortable, plain hunting clothes and could see Richard was surprised at the simple furnishings of his rooms. "We can talk privately here." He poured them both a generous goblet of brandy. "And there is also a connecting passage to your lodgings." He lowered his voice almost to a whisper. "Out of sight of Burgundian spies." Richard thanked the king. "I am most grateful for your hospitality, your grace." Louis looked pleased. "And I am grateful you travel all the way to Normandy in person, Earl Warwick. It is so unsatisfactory to discuss such important matters through intermediaries." He took a sip of his brandy, savouring it for a moment. "Now we must discuss your terms for an agreement." Richard tasted the brandy before answering. He felt its warmth flowing through his body. "All we ask, my lord, is that you do not support Margaret of Anjou or her Lancastrian supporters against the House of York."
"And what do you offer me in return?"
"We commit not to support Burgundy in any action against France." Louis looked at Richard quizzically.
"Yet your king is planning to take Charles of Burgundy as a brother-in-law."
Richard could see his plans unravelling. "That has been discussed, although nothing has been agreed, your grace." Louis looked pleased. "In that case, I would like to find a French suitor for Margaret of York." He noticed Richard's hesitation. "And I will provide a dowry of gold fit for a sister of the King of England." He warmed to the idea. "I will also pay the king in gold for each year our treaty of peace endures, and remove the restrictions on English merchants, as a gesture of our continued goodwill."
"I am sure, your grace, that King Edward would be most interested to hear your proposals."
Louis leaned forward in his chair.
"What if he persists with his plans for a treaty with Burgundy?"
Richard was prepared for the question. "I am confident that I am able to persuade him."
"It would be useful to have a plan," the king paused significantly. "Just in case."
Richard recalled how one of the French ambassadors mentioned the possibility of the lordship of Normandy. He took another sip of the fine brandy. He had been drinking wine at the reception, was aware he needed to keep a clear head.
"What do you have in mind, your grace?" "You could restore King Henry to the throne."
Richard realised from the way Louis was watching his reaction, this was not an idea that had only just occurred to him. He wondered if the hand of Margaret of Anjou was behind the suggestion. "King Henry is a good, pious man, although not fit to rule England."
"King Henry would be a good king if he had you, Earl Warwick to oversee the rule of the country in his stead."
Richard looked at Louis and saw a twinkle in his eye. He was enjoying the intrigue. "I don't need to remind your grace that King Henry has a wife waiting for the chance to put her son on the throne." Louis lowered his voice.
"The suggestion was made to me by her brother, the Duke of Calabria. If King Edward rejects our offer of peace, I could ensure my cousin Margaret of Anjou sets aside past differences between you."
He sat back, looking pleased with himself. Richard had to think fast. "You are full of surprises, your grace. You can be assured I'll do everything in my power to see a lasting peace with France."
Louis leaned forward again. "All I ask is that you think on this, and also another offer I have for you."
"And what would that be, your grace?" Richard was interested.
"If it comes to war with Burgundy, I could make you a prince. All of Orland and Zeeland could be yours, your own kingdom."
Richard was surprised. This was something he had never considered. He suddenly saw how his base at Calais could be extended to become an empire. Tired from the long day and feeling slightly dazed by the strong brandy and the unexpected turn the discussion had taken, he thanked the king for his hospitality and returned to his rooms to think on all he had heard. His meetings with the king continued for 8 days, with grand banquets and tours of the city, including a visit to the market square where Joan of Arc had been burned at the stake. News of the death of Philip of Burgundy surprised no one, although it meant Charles was now to become the new duke and even more of a threat to their plans. On the final day of his visit, Richard watched with Louis while a scribe prepared two copies of the agreement, which they both signed. It would have to be ratified by Edward in person, although that should be easier now the document had been signed by the King of France. As Richard bid farewell to King Louis, he had mixed feelings about the deal they had agreed. In his heart, Richard knew Edward would not hesitate to break the hard-won truce at the first opportunity. If that were to happen, he would need to be ready to act. Richard's brother George was waiting with Anne and his daughters for Richard's return to Warwick Castle. Richard hugged his wife and shook hands with his younger brother, pleased and surprised to see him, although he immediately knew from his brother's demeanour that the news he brought was not good. The death of the Duke of Burgundy would change Edward's position regarding Charles, and he was keen to catch up with events in his absence. "What is it, George?" "Edward rode out to my residence with his men and demanded my seal of office." George looked directly at Richard. "He has replaced me as Chancellor." Richard was tired from his long ride and sat in his favourite chair, trying to make sense of the shocking news. Their father had been Lord Chancellor, one of the highest ranking of the great officers of state, second only to the Lord High Steward. This was not merely a slight against his brother George. Edward's actions were as a slap in the face for the reputation of the entire Neville family. "Who has he appointed in your place?" "The Bishop of Bath and Wells." Richard frowned. He was somehow involved in the secrecy surrounding Edward's marriage to Elizabeth, although I've yet to discover in what way. He looked at his brother. "The important question is why." George seemed uncomfortable. "I think I was a little outspoken about the Burgundians, and have been working to secure a dispensation from the Pope to allow your daughter to marry the Duke of Clarence. I tried to be discreet, but Edward has spies everywhere now, even in my own household." "Is Earl Rivers behind all this?" George shook his head. "I understand why you could think that. Rivers has reason enough to bear a grudge against us all, yet he seems to be an honourable man, despite our differences in the past. I suspect William Herbert is plotting to bring us down, Richard."
"Lord Herbert?
What have we done to wrong him?" "Herbert accompanied Edward when he came to demand my seal of office. He looked rather pleased with himself." Anne had been watching their exchange in silence. "I am afraid there is worse news concerning you, Richard."
"What now?"
George answered. "Our enemies have been spreading a damaging rumour. They are saying you went to France to meet with Margaret of Anjou." Anne looked worried. "They also say you have made a secret pact with her. It's being repeated everywhere." Richard felt a wave of anger. He looked at them both and saw they were waiting for his reaction. Even his wife and his brother were prepared to believe the rumours were true. His reputation would be ruined unless he could convince everyone of his innocence. "I can show them who I've been meeting with." He realised he was raising his voice and took a deep breath in an effort to calm himself. "I returned with the senior ambassadors of the King of France." Anne still looked concerned. "What are we going to do about it, Richard?" He put his arm around her. "I will take the French ambassadors to meet the king. Then we will just have to see." The rhythmic stroke of the oarsman pulled the gilded barge through the murky water of the River Thames with deceptive ease. There was a light breeze coming down the river. Although almost summer, Richard was glad of the fur coat he wore. He leaned across and pointed out Greenwich Palace to his guests, led by the Count Louis de Bourbon, Admiral of France and chief ambassador of King Louis. Fluent in English, the Count was an amiable young man who had risen to his important post despite his nickname of the Bastard of Bourbon. Richard was doing his best to conceal his concern at the reception they would receive from Edward. He had only grudgingly agreed to meet them at all. Yet he had also made no mention of the rumours about Margaret of Anjou, for which Richard was grateful. Now, as they neared the stone jetty of the Palace of Westminster, he saw there was only Luke Tully with Richard's personal guard waiting to welcome them. He had foreseen this possibility and asked George, Duke of Clarence, to assist. He had also ordered Tully to have drummers and trumpeters standing by. As their barge drew alongside the old jetty, the drums and trumpets struck up an unseen signal,
causing interested passers-by to gather in a small crowd.
There was no royal banner or any sign of the king, which in itself was a breach of protocol, and contrasted starkly with his own reception at Rouen. George played his part well, however making a short speech of thanks and explaining that the king was waiting to greet them in Westminster Palace.
After an embarrassingly long wait in the king's antechamber,
they were finally ushered in. The king was dressed informally in riding clothes, and instead of the advisers Richard expected to see attending such a meeting, Lord Herbert was at his right side, regarding them suspiciously with Earl Rivers on his left. Richard wondered if Edward planned to embarrass him further in front of the two men he most suspected of trying to harm his reputation. He stepped forward and formally introduced Count Louis and the other French ambassadors. Edward regarded them with poorly disguised disinterest. His welcome was cold, as if he would rather not have met with them at all. He did not invite them to be seated, although there were empty chairs at his table.
"Good day to you, ambassadors. You will understand that this meeting is a short one."
He looked at Lord Herbert, who nodded in confirmation. "There are rumours of plague in the city. My court is moving to Windsor right away." Richard was disappointed. "There are significant matters regarding the details of this treaty that cannot be rushed, Your Grace." Edward looked up at him, unsmiling. "In that case, Earl Warwick, I shall appoint representatives to study these matters in detail." Richard knew he was about to dismiss them, before any of the ambassadors had even spoken. "King Louis of France has signed the treaty, which now needs to be ratified by Your Grace." He looked directly at Edward. "I recommend you to invite the French ambassadors to attend your court in Windsor." Richard knew he was making a bold suggestion and risking a stern rebuttal. He hoped he knew Edward well enough to be confident he would avoid confrontation when he could. Edward agreed. "If we must..." He turned to the Count of Bourbon. "We will continue this discussion at a later date, Count Louis." Richard thought he saw a gleam of triumph in William Herbert's eyes as they thanked the king and returned to the waiting barge. As they made their way back down the river, the count spoke to him quietly, so the others would not overhear.
"It seems, Earl Warwick, the Charles of Burgundy has been here ahead of us."
Richard disagreed. "The people don't trust Burgundy. They never have, and I doubt they ever will." He lowered his voice, concerned that even on his private river barge, his words would be overheard and repeated. "The problem I have to address is that the king is surrounded by those who have put their own interests before those of their king." He looked at the count, one of the few people he now felt he could trust to keep his words confidential.
"They are traitors to our cause, Count Louis, and I will deal with them."